Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, this is Logan Gage for the CSC out in Washington, D.C. And today we're discussing Richard Dawkins' book review of Michael Behe's new book, The Edge of Evolution, in the New York Times, and we're asking, where's the science? Perhaps the most striking feature of Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion is its lack of science. I had thought that this was an anomaly, but Dawkins' New York Times review, out Sunday, of Michael Behe's The Edge of Evolution, The Search for the Limits of Darwinism, is the same patchwork of fallacies devoid of science as The God Delusion. Let me count the ways. First, Dawkins begins by trying to discredit Behe, noting that Behe's own department has distanced itself from Behe's work on intelligent design. But this is not a refutation of Behe's work. Rather, it is poisoning the well. Second, Dawkins claims that Jerry Coyne's review of Behe was devastating. Great! Then why not recount the argument rather than claiming that someone else has already refuted Behe? This is a subtle argument from authority. Third, Dawkins says Judge Jones in the Dover trial humiliated Behe. Okay, but what exactly was the argument that humiliated him? What was the scientific evidence that undermined his case? Surely the fact that such technicalities would be complicated is not too much for the Charles Simonia Chair for the Public Understanding of Science to relay to us. Dawkins writes that The Edge of Evolution is Behe's attempt to soldier on and stage a comeback from the Dover defeat. Too bad for Professor Dawkins that Behe was at work on The Edge long before the Dover trial ever enacted its policy. Fourth, Dawkins asserts that The Edge of Evolution contains, quote, little about irreducible complexity, implying that Behe is backpedaling. In fact, The Edge actually extends the arguments against Darwinism from irreducible complexity. Behe argues that irreducible complexity represents a form of biological complexity that random mutations cannot produce. But it's an extreme example well beyond the reach of Darwinian processes. The quest of The Edge is to find out the limit of how much biological complexity Darwinian processes can produce. And Behe finds that the limit is far below irreducibly complex machines. In other words, after this book, the case for evolution has gotten worse, not better. That said, even though irreducible complexity is not the focus of the book, Behe nevertheless devotes much space to showing how the argument from irreducible complexity itself has only gotten worse for Darwinians. As it turns out, we now have more powerful microscopes and have found that there are irreducibly complex systems regulating the irreducibly complex systems. Behe points out that there are little trucks that build the irreducibly complex psyllium. They bring in parts and take them away. The trucks even have forward and reverse motors. And they know when to stop working and conserve energy if there is damage to the psyllium. Moreover, these machines assemble via a complex set of assembly instructions that represent far greater complexity than the final irreducibly complex machine itself. Thus, Behe says that biology contains not just irreducible complexity, but irreducible complexity squared. I encourage you all to read this part of The Edge of Evolution, especially see Figure 5.2. Moving on. Fifth, Dawkins misrepresents Behe as claiming that ID is correct because Darwinism can't account for irreducibly complex systems. In other words, Dawkins wrongly understands ID as merely a negative argument against evolution, thus missing the true structure of the argument. Behe actually claims that Darwinian processes are insufficient for making irreducibly complex systems, and that intelligent processes are, note the positive aspect, are capable of producing such systems. He is saying that when the two theories' explanatory powers are compared, ID wins out, and we infer that ID is the best explanation. Dawkins is stuck using old-school deductive arguments, but Behe is using a form of argumentation common to the historical sciences, namely, inference to the best explanation. This is also called abduction. It is a comparative style of argumentation where one lines up all the possible explanations that one knows about and asks which ones are capable of producing the phenomenon in question, among other things. Dawkins also says that Behe's claim that the bacterial flagellum will not work properly without all of its parts is, quote, without justification. Unfortunately for Dawkins, knockout experiments have been done, and so this assertion is not without justification. For example, Scott Minnick, microbiologist at the University of Idaho, he also testified at the Dover trial, about his knockout experiments, which found that the flagellum is irreducibly complex with respect to its 35 or so genes. Judge Jones ignored this testimony, and so does Richard Dawkins. Why doesn't Dawkins know the relevant science here? Finally, in this regard, Dawkins also resorts to the someone else refuted Behe argument. He claims that at trial, Ken Miller, quote, showed how the bacterial flagellar motor could evolve via known functional intermediates, end quote. Again, this is just false. What Miller did was to point to another irreducibly complex system, this is known as the type 3 secretory system, and claim it as an intermediate. Unfortunately for Dr. Miller and for Dr. Dawkins, the best evidence now shows that the type 3 secretory system is derivative from the flagellum, not the other way around. Sixth, Dawkins gets a kick out of telling audiences around the world that evolution is, quote, not random, because natural selection selects for function, that is, it's regular, rather than randomly. This is true, but it's also trivial. Dawkins fails to mention that all of the novelty which natural selection has to work with comes from random mutations. The creative part of the process is blind, as Dawkins himself has beautifully shown in his books. So Behe is correct to focus in on seeing what random mutations can produce, because that's the heart of the process. For if it cannot produce the right mutations, in the right quantities, in the right amount of time, then natural selection cannot act to preserve them. Seventh, about three-fourths of the way through the review, Dawkins finally makes his first attempt to actually argue against Behe with evidence. If Behe is correct that random mutations cannot produce the many precise mutations necessary to create the variety of species we observe today, asked Dawkins, then why do we observe such variation in dogs that we know that humans have bred? But it is here that I wonder if Dawkins has even read The Edge of Evolution. In it, Behe claimed that changes within species are well within the creative power of natural selection and random mutation. Behe has claimed that the creative limit of the Darwinian process is somewhere between orders and genre. Perhaps Professor Dawkins missed the chart on the first page. I'm afraid this is a straw man. At this point, it seems that Dawkins' argument amounts to, wow, look at the varieties of dogs that have been produced relatively recently. Surely Darwinism, then, can produce much more over a long time without the help of intelligent breeders. And it is precisely because this sort of fuzzy argument is prevalent, even among Oxford Darwinists, that Behe's work in The Edge is important. Behe looks at studies of actual organismal populations to place limits on what random mutation can produce. Even Darwinists have to admit that given the age of the Earth and population sizes of organisms, there must be some limit to what Darwinian processes can produce in a given population in a given amount of time. Dawkins should spend his time arguing from the same body of data that Michael Behe argues from, malaria, HIV, and other viruses, for his own notion of where this limit lies rather than bashing Behe for ever attempting to define such a limit at all, for trying to do science. Eighth, Dawkins chides Behe for daring to state something contrary to the beliefs of great evolutionary mathematicians and geneticists. Perhaps Dawkins will try to imagine if Darwin himself were not allowed to make an argument because the authorities of his day disagree with him. This is another argument from authority and is completely invalid. And if you have a minute, for fun, try inserting the word Galileo or another path-breaking scientist into the penultimate paragraph where you see Behe. It won't totally make sense, but I think you'll get my point. Finally, Dawkins says Behe must publish his work in the scientific journals. Well, first of all, he has. As one example, Behe published computer modeling of the evolution of binding sites in different size populations in the journal Protein Science. This has relevance to his work in The Edge. Second, as concerns intelligent design, I think Dawkins has already shown why pro-ID papers are dead upon arrival by revealing to us the prejudices of even Behe's own department. Indeed, Dawkins should find irony in the fact that The Origin of Species was not originally published in a scientific journal, but as a book. But that aside, how on earth can Professor Dawkins, who systematically refuses to debate ID scientists, chide Behe for not being willing to, quote, rumble for his ideas in the public square? Friends, this is shameful. This has been Logan Gage for the CSC out in Washington, D.C. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Finn. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.